This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news.
There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The squeeze on Iran. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. On this Friday, May 11, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The U.S. has imposed sanctions on several Iranian companies and individuals that it says are working to funnel American dollars to a military unit.
President Trump has announced the date and place of his unprecedented meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee have released more than 3,000 ads that Russian propagandists bought on Facebook around election time.
And on the business front, Starbucks making a push for more coffee sales in the afternoon.
Starbucks has been experiencing slowing sales in their U.S. cafes for a few quarters now, and they finally have kind of arrived at what they think is the main reason, and that is that they don't have enough customers coming in the afternoon. So they're trying to fix that and try to attract more people to come in the afternoon when business is typically slow.
Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Jargon on the new strategy by Starbucks. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, it hasn't taken long for the Trump administration to act after withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal, working with the United Arab Emirates. The Treasury Department yesterday imposed sanctions on several Iranian companies, individuals, and officials that it says are operating an illegal currency exchange network in order to funnel U.S. dollars to a blacklisted military unit. The sanctions are designed to cut off Tehran's access to dollars, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The United States, by pulling out of the agreement and really getting our European allies' noses way out of joint, makes it far harder to enact new sanctions on what I perceive to be the greatest dangers we face.
The Trump administration is leveraging U.S. economic power to push for a new nuclear agreement.
And I hope to be able to make a deal with them. A good deal, a fair deal, a good deal for them. Better for them. Better for them.
The administration wants a deal that not only restricts Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile programs, but also ends Tehran's support for militants fighting across the Middle East. The date and place are set for President Trump's historic meeting with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. It will take place next month, June 12th to be exact, in Singapore. The design is to get Mr. Kim to give up his nuclear weapons program. Mr. Trump will be the first sitting U.S. president to meet with a leader of North Korea, which emerged as a communist state from the dusk of World War II and the dawn of the Cold War. Its development of nuclear weapons over the past two decades has posed a major threat to global security.
We're going to set the table. We're going to make a great deal for the world, for North Korea, for South Korea, for Japan, for China.
Foreign policy analysts said the summit is likely to generate good headlines given Mr. Trump's eagerness to make a deal and Mr. Kim's attempts to look cooperative. It's not clear whether North Korean disarmament is what Mr. Kim has in mind. Republican leaders are encouraging President Trump to intervene in competitive primaries, concluding that he is a powerful force to energize GOP voters and help the party hold its Senate majority in the midterm elections. The decision is a notable reversal for top GOP senators, some of whom feuded with Mr. Trump during the first year of his presidency. It's a story by Michael Shearer, political reporter at The Washington Post. Michael, what are you hearing?
Well, there was a lot of concern last year after the sort of Republican disaster in Alabama, in which a Democrat was able to win after a very controversial nominee came out of the Republican primary. And Republicans have been worried that a lot of the discontent and tumult within the party, which Donald Trump tends to personify, would make it harder for them in the November elections. But they had a good night this week on Tuesday. They got a candidate they're very happy with in both Indiana and West Virginia. They also got someone Trump has endorsed in Ohio to run for Senate. And they're now looking to sort of capitalize on that. And they're thinking that the president could be a pretty effective messenger in a lot of these states. These are states that the president won in 2016, where there are Democratic incumbent senators. And he can be an effective messenger in attacking the Democrats and sort of carrying the Republican message. It's a shift from where we were just a few months ago, in which Republicans spent a lot more time worried about what Trump was going to put on his Twitter feed in the morning.
Mm. All right, so what has happened to change the thought process here?
Well, they got wins they needed, and the president showed on Tuesday that he could intervene in a primary at a late stage and have the result that Republicans in Washington wanted. Don Blankenship, the former coal mine CEO who had freshly got out of prison, was running while on parole, was rather controversial, using phrases like China person and cocaine Mitch to describe the Senate Majority Leader. They were worried that he could come out on top in that primary. The president put out a tweet on Monday, and according to Blankenship, pretty much everyone else, it had an effect.
So does it depend on the state here where a senator might ask for President Trump to intervene?
It does, but Republicans have what they have going for them is that most of the competitive Senate races this cycle are happening in states with Democrats that Trump won in 2016. So the map is really all about places like Missouri, Montana, Indiana, West Virginia, Florida, places where Trump, in theory, could have a real impact. A place like West Virginia, where Joe Manchin is the Democrat, went 40 points for Trump in 2016. He won by a 40-point margin. It wasn't even close. And so, Manchin is going to be running in a place where a lot of his voters, if he wins, have voted also for Trump. So if Trump comes in there and starts beating him up, could have an effect.
We're speaking with Michael Shearer, political reporter at The Washington Post. We're talking about President Trump's intervention in the upcoming midterm elections. Been able to learn anything so far about voter enthusiasm in the primaries that might translate to the midterms?
Well, yeah, so far the voter enthusiasm, and this is typical for midterm years, is with the party that is not in power. Barack Obama had a really tough go of it in 2010. Democrats had control of the House and Senate at that point, and he basically got wiped out, or as close to a wipeout as you can get, in those midterm elections that year. So far, it's clear that the enthusiasm in these primaries has been with Democrats. It's especially true in the special elections in the House and the Senate. They're just turning out in higher numbers. Liberals are coming out. Moderates are swinging to Democrats. The question that pollsters ask of, do you want to elect someone who is a check on power in Washington? Even Republicans can be sympathetic to that question. And you have places like Tennessee, which are a deep red state, where a Democrat is actually running pretty strongly right now in the Senate contest. Republicans, some sort of swing voters, like divided government. They don't want unified government. And Republicans don't quite feel like they have a reason to turn out, because they won. They've got their people in power. Opposition tends to be a motivator at the ballot box. But we'll see how strong that is. I mean, the economy is doing better. The president's approval rating has ticked up a little bit. The generic ballot question has narrowed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to elect, a Republican or Democrat, to Congress? So it could moderate. But I think it's, almost everyone you talk to who watches this stuff will say Democrats are going to have an advantage come this fall.
Thanks, Michael. Michael Shearer, political reporter at The Washington Post. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly as well at Gordon Deal. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday. Newly released documents show how Russian propagandists on Facebook worked to sow discord in the U.S. before and after the 2016 presidential election. Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee yesterday made public more than 3,000 ads that Facebook said were purchased by a pro-Kremlin group. We get more from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
The ads initially were targeted to simply reach large segments, but weren't very effective. But in 2017, these groups bought ads focused on things like people with certain job titles, such as coal miner, or certain employers, including Facebook itself. Only a subset of the ads explicitly mention the election. On Election Day, for example, an ad posted by a Russian-backed page named Williams and Calvin urged black voters to boycott the election. The ad was seen about 9,000 times. Other ads after the election sought to stir up anti-Trump sentiment among African Americans. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The release of the ads comes weeks after Republicans on the Intelligence Committee ended their year-long probe into Russia's activity during the 2016 election. Their report concluded that there were no signs of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is urging an immediate halt to all hostile acts in the Middle East after Israeli forces bombed Iranian targets inside Syria. Israel says the strikes were a retaliation for an Iranian rocket barrage on its positions in the Golan Heights and has called on the UN Security Council and Secretary General to immediately condemn Iran's attack. The Security Council, deeply divided over Syria, is highly unlikely to issue a statement, and as of this morning, no council member had asked for a meeting. Analysts say Singapore's diplomatic ties with North Korea and its relative proximity make the small Southeast Asian nation a natural choice for the historic summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Trump announced details of the meeting yesterday.
And on June 12th, in Singapore, I'll be meeting with Kim Jong-un to pursue a future of peace and security for the world.
Analysts also note that Kim will be on friendly territory, but not home turf. The Hawaii volcano that has sputtered lava for a week forced 2,000 residents to evacuate, destroyed 2 dozen homes, and threatens a geothermal plant. Now threatens to blow its top in the coming days or weeks. Janet Babb is with the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory.
It could explode a lot of ash into the air, and if it's vigorous enough, it could even push ballistic fragments, football size or larger fragments of rock into the air.
Scientists note that as long as people stay out of closed areas of a national park around the volcano, the possible explosion won't be deadly. Not only do the Sixers want to lure soon-to-be free agent LeBron James to Philadelphia, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, the AAA affiliate of the Phillies, want him also, even though he's never played baseball. The Iron Pigs have written an open letter to the Cavaliers forward saying if he joins the team and leads it to a championship, only then will he be able to position himself ahead of Michael Jordan for the title of greatest of all time. Jordan, of course, tried his hand at minor league baseball in 1994 and didn't fare too well. The letter goes on, the choice is clear. Your legacy is on the line.
That's awesome. Very good. Well done by the Iron Pigs. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Starbucks has little trouble getting customers in the door for their morning coffee. The problem is getting them to visit in the afternoon. Time for a new strategy. Here's Wall Street Journal restaurant reporter Julie Jargon. Julie, what's happening here?
Yeah, so Starbucks has been experiencing slowing sales in their U.S. Cafes for a few quarters now, and they finally have kind of arrived at what they think is the main reason, and that is that they don't have enough customers coming in the afternoon. So they're trying to fix that and try to attract more people to come in the afternoon when business is typically slow.
Now, how will they do that?
Well, they're planning to launch a big ad campaign this month and for the next 3 months, which is a little unusual. Starbucks doesn't do a whole lot of traditional advertising. And I'm not sure exactly what the thrust of the campaign is, but something, along the lines of trying to encourage people to come in the afternoons. They are also rolling out a bunch of new cold coffee and tea drinks, because that's what people tend to drink in the afternoon instead of hot coffee.
Okay.
And then they have some happy hour promotions in the afternoon where people can get deals on different drinks.
Do people sometimes, and I'm thinking of just of my wife here, like she tends to stay away from coffee in the afternoon because it'll keep her awake all night. Is that part of the reason, or we don't know?
That could very well be. And in fact, I've heard from a lot of people since the story ran saying that they often can't get a decaf coffee in the afternoon at Starbucks, but they don't brew the pots because probably there's not a huge demand for it, so they don't have them waiting. I know when I've been there and have requested a decaf in the afternoon, they can make you a decaf Americano or some sort of other espresso-based decaf drink. But for people who just want a plain decaf and can't get it or have to wait for them to brew a new pot, that can certainly be a deterrent.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal restaurant reporter Julie Jargon. Her piece is called Starbucks Trying to Woo Afternoon Customers. You said, too, there's going to be a focus on store traffic. How does what does that mean for like sales of pods and stuff in grocery stores?
Well, so they have recently entered into a deal with Nestle to have Nestle handle the distribution and sales of their packaged ground and whole bean coffee in grocery stores. And I think that will, you know, part of the strategy behind that is so that they can focus on their, you know, their actual cafes and not have the distraction of managing a whole other business of selling packaged coffee in grocery stores. So that should free up some of their, you know, their decision making and their attention and focus to growing traffic at the actual stores.
Julie Jargon, Wall Street Journal restaurant reporter. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark, but shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock identity theft protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware or emerging viruses. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter the promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon at LifeLock.com for an additional 10% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for joining us on this Friday, May 11. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. New sanctions by the U.S. against Iran. Trump to meet Kim Jong-un on June 12th in Singapore. More than 3,000 Facebook ads have been released that were purchased by Russian propagandists. The president today addresses the high cost of prescription drugs, how an army surgeon restored the lost ear of a soldier. Rolls-Royce introduces a luxury SUV called the Cullinan, starts at $325,000, and a Florida cop gets credit for saving a baby's life. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, as you know, the unemployment rate dropped to 3.9% in April, and many companies say they can't find enough workers. But if there's a national labor shortage, many workers sure aren't feeling it. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman has a look at some of the reasons why. Rick, what's up here?
Every time I dare write about this so-called labor shortage, I hear from a lot of people who say, you know what, if there's a labor shortage, it sure isn't evident where I live. I have been looking for a job for months. I seem to have pretty good qualifications, and no one ever even returns my phone call. I send these resumes in, and I never hear back from anybody. So I was on I moderated a panel at the Milken Institute's global conference recently on the topic of the labor force, what's going on in the labor force. And it was refreshing because we had some experts on hiring and on the labor force saying, yeah, there are some problems in the labor force. Employers do not actually do a good job of looking for the right people. They're not good at finding the skills they need. They don't often explain what it is they need. They don't often look in the right places. Job sites are outdated, and we're still using software that looks for keywords on resumes and things like that, and doesn't actually look for people who might actually be able to learn how to do a job that exists or be trained to do the job that exists. So there are a lot of gaps in the labor force that suggest things could be a lot better. This is all economic activity that's not happening and is holding back economic growth. So it's something important that I think needs to be addressed on the employer side for once.
Mm. We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman about his piece entitled Why You Can't Get the Job You Want. It's interesting. There's like 6.5 million available jobs, right? And roughly that same number of people looking for work. Is it that there's so many, say, low-paying service sector jobs that people don't want?
Well, here's the phrase you hear frequently, skills mismatch. In other words, the jobs that are open require skills that are different from the skills that the people who are looking for jobs have. Now, this is not a unique problem. I mean, this has happened before. And guess what companies used to do? They used to train workers.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, we're only interested in people who arrive with the exact skills we need. And if we can't find those people, we're just not going to hire. You know, I think part of what happened here is we had such a, I mean, when unemployment hit 10%, going back to the recession that ran from 2007 to 2009, I mean, we had mass layoffs. There were tons of unemployed people. There was a surplus of workers, and there was even a surplus of skilled workers. I think many companies just got accustomed to the idea that pretty much all we have to do to find the people we want is just put a job, you know, post a job ad, and we'll get 100, we'll get 100, qualified applicants, and we only need to try once. It was easy to find people then. And they really have just not built the systems that are needed to find the people they need or to train the people they need when workers become scarce. So I think companies are, starting to do some of these types of things, but I think we might be in early days still.
Somebody pointed out in the story, too, that community colleges seem to be a big area of missed opportunity for, say, retraining folks.
Yeah, community colleges are sort of like the backwater of the education system. That's kind of how they're viewed, especially by the four-year universities, who really should be recruiting people from community colleges, because a lot of people kind of get started at community college. They maybe backfill some of the things they need to learn that they didn't learn in high school. And then they should be in a position to go on to a four-year school. A lot of times that doesn't happen. Community colleges are also a terrific place for people to learn, let's say people who don't want to go to college or, just don't think that's the pathway for them. They still need to learn skills that will help them get a good job and build a good career. And community college is the place to do that. It's really the bridge between high school. You know, what you learn in high school is generally not enough, but not everybody wants or needs what you learn in college. So community colleges are a good middle ground. I think in some communities, employers are doing a better job of partnering up with community colleges and saying, okay, we're going to help you establish a curriculum that's going to teach people the skills we actually need. And, you know, maybe when you finish a program like that, you've got a fairly clear path at a job at a local company. But I think there's not enough of that going on. So that's something companies and communities can certainly do more of.
Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman, who's based in New York. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday. Welcome in. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there are few among us who haven't gotten angry at our cable TV or internet provider for one reason or another. Taking your anger out on a cable company employee and potentially putting them in danger may not be the best way to vent your frustrations, however. That's what apparently happened earlier this week in New Jersey, where police say a woman got angry at a cable TV worker and left her stranded in the air. After a dispute arose between the customer and the worker, reports say the 59-year-old woman turned off the worker's truck, stranding her in midair. Police say the woman took some unidentified company property before walking away. Thankfully, the worker escaped the lift unharmed. The customer has a litany of charges to answer for her cable rage, including harassment, false imprisonment, disorderly conduct, and criminal trespassing. She was released from custody with a pending court date. All of that for a simple turn of the key. Was it worth it? Probably not.
False imprisonment.
Yes.
Left her stranded in that bucket, I guess, high in the air, right?
She couldn't get out.
Wow.
So that's a form of imprisonment, I guess.
I'm not laughing at all.
No,
I don't think that's funny or clever. No.
No.
No, that's terrible.
Not something you ever have considered before when perhaps you were frustrated by the, 7-hour window for installation for your cable or something along those lines.
Those aren't the folks you usually get mad at, though.
No, I don't.
It's usually the folks on the phone, you said. They put you on hold for, 45 minutes.
Right.
Then you get cut off. And you got to call back again. or you get switched to a department and the call drops. So that's the type of stuff.
For the most part, the people that show up at your house are just doing their best to try and do their job. And for those of us, Gordon, who can't walk and chew gum at the same time, this seems like an incredible feat. A Massachusetts college student has run one of the fastest miles ever while juggling, an endeavor called joggling. Zach Prescott ran a 4-minute, 43.2-second mile on Tuesday while juggling three lacrosse balls. The junior business student, who was on Boston University's track and cross-country squads, told the Boston Globe it's all about focus and rhythm. Once he gets used to the speed when he's running, quote, you can pretty much just juggle in place. If verified, his time would beat the previous world record set back in 1986 by just 0.6 seconds, though Guinness says the process of determining if he's actually broken it or not could take several months. I guess they got to figure out what the wind situation was, or what the conditions were like, if the timing was accurate.
Okay.
This Guinness takes this obviously very seriously.
Right.
It's all they do, so they take it
verify
very seriously. But for most of us, for me, for sure, I couldn't juggle one round for 3 seconds. Never
That's...
mind run a 4-minute mile.
Yeah.
Or 4.5-minute mile while juggling.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
It really is.
When you think about how much exertion it takes to run that fast. Now, he's on the track team. Maybe it doesn't take as much exertion for him than it would for us. But, that would be hard enough.
I mean, that's flying.
Yes.
Flying around the track.
that mile would have broken records. Like 100 years ago,
yeah,
that would have broken the mile
right.
record. Never mind juggling while doing it.
Wow. So that's a 32-year-old record.
Yeah.
That could be falling.
Yes.
By a mere 0.6 of a second. Impressive.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. How about this story? Army surgeons have successfully transplanted a new ear on a soldier who lost her left ear in a car accident. The procedure, a first of its kind in the Army, involved harvesting cartilage from the soldier's ribs to carve out a replacement ear, which was then placed under the skin of her forearm to allow the ear to grow. CBS News says in 2016, Shamika Burridge was returning to Fort Bliss, Texas after visiting family in Mississippi when her tire blew out. Her vehicle skidded 700 feet before flipping and ejecting her. The accident left Ms. Burridge with head injuries, fractures in her spine, and the total loss of her left ear. The harvested cartilage was placed in the forearm to allow for the formation of new blood vessels. This will enable her to have feeling in her ear once the rehab process is complete. Lieutenant Colonel Owen Johnson, Chief of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery at William Beaumont Army Medical Center, says the ear will even have a fresh nerve, so she'll be able to feel it. Ms. Burridge will not lose any hearing ability. She has two more surgeries to go, by the way. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the U.S. has taken a step toward cutting Iran off from the global economy, levying sanctions on a financing network and accusing the country's central bank of helping funnel U.S. dollars to a blacklisted elite military unit. President Trump spoke at a rally in Elkhart, Indiana last night.
We're putting the harshest, strongest, most stringent sanctions on Iran.
The Treasury Department imposed sanctions on several Iranian companies and individuals, it says, are operating an illegal currency exchange network in the United Arab Emirates. The U.S. military has concluded that no single failure or deficiency was to blame for the October ambush that killed 4 U.S. service members in Niger, according to a summary of the investigators' findings. But the report concludes that a combination of poor training, complacency, and a culture of excessive risk led to the ill-fated mission. U.S. Africa Command Marine General Thomas Waldhauser.
I take ownership for all the events connected to the ambush of 4 October. again, the responsibility is mine.
Waldhauser described how the U.S. and Nigerian troops came to find themselves outnumbered by Islamic State fighters on what was believed to be a low-risk mission. Newly released documents show how Russian propagandists on Facebook grew increasingly sophisticated and inflammatory in their tactics as they worked to disrupt the 2016 presidential election. Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee have made public for the first time the full cache of more than 3,000 ads that Facebook says were purchased by a pro-Kremlin group. The ads show how aggressive the Facebook pages were in pushing hot-button social and racial issues, including illegal immigration and police brutality. So much for that delete Facebook movement. Between March 18th and March 26th, Facebook shares plunged more than 24%, losing about $134 billion in market value after news surfaced that 50 million Facebook profiles were harvested by data firm Cambridge Analytica. But guess what? Wall Street now says, never mind. After a strong quarterly earnings report and high-profile but uneventful congressional appearances by CEO Mark Zuckerberg in April, shares had fully recouped their losses as of yesterday. Although Facebook could still face some federal fines and tighter regulation, investors are overly optimistic about the company's future.
No shock there, right?
Unbelievable.
Nobody was going to cancel their accounts and all that other stuff. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. A forever bond has been created between a Florida family and a cop from the sheriff's office in Marion County, Florida. Deputy Jeremy Nix was in the right place at the right time as he was driving home from his shift on Wednesday. He's credited with saving an unresponsive three-month-old when he rushed the infant to the hospital. The incident was caught on dash cam video from Mr. Nix's cruiser. He was flagged down by a distressed mother at an intersection, and he sprang in to help the baby. CBS News says the mother's first words to him were, "Don't let my baby die." Officer Nix attempted to revive the child, named Kingston, but after calling for an ambulance, decided the baby could not wait. He drove the infant to Ocala Regional Medical Center with his siren on. Young Kingston is expected to make a full recovery. Officer Nix said in his 17 years on the job, it was the most scary, emotional, and rewarding day ever. Says he thanked God for putting him in that spot. Oh, the race baiters won't like this, but the story involved black people and white people working together. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.